Now is the time, episode 17. I'm Caleb Succo, and this is the podcast where we talk about how we can use our lives right now to worship our God. When it comes to worship, no one influences you and affects your worship more than your spouse. Friends, today we are talking about marriage, and in particular, arranged marriages. Is it biblical? Are arranged marriages biblical? You know, we are in trouble in America when it comes to marriages. We are in trouble in the church when it comes to marriages. So I think you're going to want to stick around and hear what I have to say about arranged marriages today. It might not be exactly what you think. It might not be exactly what you think. Let me quickly just get two announcements out of the way before we get into the content, because we've got a lot of good content today. So the first one is this. Last week on the podcast, I announced that whoever would share our 9 in November page on our website about getting 9 new supporters in November, I would enter them to win a free copy of the book Jesus is Greater Than Religion, the best-selling book right now. Jesus is Greater Than Religion. And so I very scientifically wrote on a bunch of sticky notes all the people that shared it, jumbled them around, and at a very randomly chose one, and the winner is Giles. I believe I'm saying his name right because he's a listener, and last time I think he asked a question a couple weeks ago and I didn't say it correctly. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Giles is the winner there, and I will put a link up to his Twitter profile, and I believe he has a blog also, on the show notes. So, Giles, congratulations. I will send that book off to you as soon as you get me your address, and I can get that in the mail to you. And then the other announcement is simply about our 9 in November campaign for this month. We have been praying for God to provide 9 new supporters in November, because that's one of the reasons we're here in the States right now, is to raise support that we need so we can continue full-time there in Ukraine. And, you know, I've been really encouraged. We have 5 new supporters already, and we're halfway in the month, and we already have more, you know, we're more than halfway there. So we're, to reach that goal of 9, we just need 4 more supporters. And maybe you've been thinking about that. Maybe you've been following our ministry. Just check out the page that I made. Go to succofamily.org/9, N-I-N-E. succofamily.org/N-I-N-E. And there's a real simple form on there you can fill out. We appreciate your support. And you can also just share that with your networks. That would help out also. Okay, friends, on to the content for today. Are arranged marriages biblical? Like I said, we have a big problem in the church and in our culture today when it comes to marriage. And quite honestly, we're in trouble. It is a problem of epic proportions. And I don't think that you can really nail it down to one source, because it's a problem that is so deeply embedded in our culture that the church often doesn't even recognize that it's there. It's blind. What is this problem? Well, I'll share with you what the problem is a little bit later. But we see it in best-selling books that promote it. Movies, well, quite honestly, romanticize this problem. Even in something as simple as Disney cartoons and children's films, it is set in a way that makes kids want it and look for it and wait for it. And it's so subtle, yet so prevalent in our culture, that many parents unknowingly indoctrinate their children with this same really wrong and poisonous way of thinking. In fact, I believe that this problem is so significant that it is the reason many people enter marriage on cloud nine. They are so excited, so in love, so looking forward to spending their rest of their life with that perfect husband or wife that they have met. And 5-6 years down the road, they find themselves in a completely different place. They're not on cloud nine anymore. They are much, much lower. It is the reason so many couples are unhappy with their spouses and with their marriages today. It's also a big factor behind the reason why so many people wait so long to get married today. And we have the age of marriage creeping up and up. But on the other hand, it is the reason that often young people run off and elope and get married without any counsel or advice and get married too young. Quite frankly, it is really the reason that divorce in the church is pretty much the same as it is in the rest of our society. What is the problem? Well, I call it Cinderella theology. The problem is simply this: getting married because you fell in love. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, that's good. Shouldn't you get married if you fell in love? Well, frankly, it's not biblical. Getting married just because you fell in love is not biblical. It's also not very wise. And it's not something that I want my kids to do. Let me explain just a little bit here. You see, if you marry someone based upon how they make you feel, then you will also be very tempted to leave that same person if they don't continue to produce the same feelings in you. And if that is your basis for marriage, how a person makes you feel, then that will also be your basis for leaving that person. In other words, if you fell in love, you can fall out of love. Timothy Keller wrote a really tremendous book called The Meaning of Marriage, and I highly recommend that you check it out. In fact, you need to check it out if you're married. You need to check it out if you're a parent. You need to check it out if you're not married. In fact, I would highly recommend it to someone who is not married, who is looking to the future of being married. But I just want to read to you a small section from that book called The Meaning of Marriage. And I'll put a link to the book in Amazon on the show notes. And All right, well, let me just read this section and you can, and then I'll respond to it. The in-love experience passes when the flaws in the other person come home to us. Things that seemed small and inconsequential now loom large. We begin to feel that we did not really know the person after all. And this presents us with the challenge of loving a person who at the moment seems in large part a stranger, not the person you remember marrying. When this happens, people respond in a number of different ways. If your purpose in marriage was to acquire a soulmate, a person who would not change you and who would supportively help you reach your life's goals, then this particular reality of marriage will be deeply disorienting. You wake up to the realization that your marriage will take a huge investment of time just to make it work. Just as distressing will be the discovery that your spouse finds you a stranger and has begun to confront you with a list of your serious shortcomings. Your first response will be to tell yourself you made a bad choice and failed to find someone truly. End quote. All right. I think this helps to understand where I'm going with this. Marrying because you are in love, yes, it's unbiblical and it's not wise. That doesn't mean that being in love is a bad thing, or that you shouldn't marry someone you're in love with. In fact, I would hope that you would be in love with the person that you are marrying. But that being said, the important thing to understand here is that being in love is not a basis for marriage, nor is it the primary reason or deciding factor when you choose a spouse. And here's the thing. When I speak about being in love, what am I talking about? I'm talking about an emotional and physiological state that comes usually early in a relationship and is brought on by a combination of hormones, imagination, and romantic expectations. That's what I mean when I talk about being in love. How long does it last? Well, it depends. Depends on the relationship. It depends how much you're willing to work on the relationship. So falling in love isn't really wrong. It's just not a basis for marriage. If we go to Scripture and try to determine how one should go about choosing a spouse, I think we'll find a couple of things. And one is, we need to look at character. We need to take a serious look at character. And there's probably no better place to go in Scripture to understand that than the book of Proverbs. Solomon primarily wrote, or he wrote a lot of the Proverbs, and it was primarily to his children and to sons who are going to be kings, sons who are going to be rulers. And he wrote a lot about how to choose a spouse. So as you read through the Proverbs in chapters 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you find a lot of contrast and comparison of the wise woman and the foolish woman, of the prostitute and the wise woman. And much of that is because Solomon was preparing and directing his son in making a choice for his spouse. And then at the end of the book of Proverbs, you have Proverbs 31. And you have the Proverbs 31 woman, right? I find it ironic that generally that section of scripture is used in women's ministry. Well, you say, well, why is that ironic? It's about a woman. I know it is. But that was written to young men. That was written so that they could make a wise and proper choice in choosing a wife. And that's why there is the focus on character, on who the woman really is. Because that's where the focus should be when we choose a spouse. And the reality is that when you marry someone, you can be in love with the person, but that does not mean you have learned how to love that person. And this brings us over to arranged marriages. Are arranged marriages biblical? Well, I think the simple answer is yes. They are biblical. They are biblical in the sense that, well, you find quite a few arranged marriages in the Bible, in the Old Testament, and in the New Testament. A couple of examples. How about Adam and Eve? You might not have thought of that before. Adam and Eve, arranged marriage? Well, of course. Adam was alone. He was by himself. God said, hey, you need a helper. Here you go. God arranged it. And he didn't do what we find in the Cinderella story. I didn't explain that earlier. I call it Cinderella theology. Cinderella theology is the problem. It's the problem that many people go into marriage with that understanding. God didn't go to Adam and parade before him 12, 15, 20, 30 women and then ask Adam, okay, Adam, when you feel like one, you know, you fell in love, like you found the one, let me know. And she can be your wife. No, he just gave her one. So here you go. I arranged it for you. Learn to love her. Of course, I don't think Adam had a problem with that because he hadn't seen a woman before. He had nothing to compare her with. But unfortunately, many people go looking for a spouse with Cinderella theology today. I am going to wait until that one man or that one woman gives me that fuzzy feeling inside and we fall in love, and that's how I will know that this is the person I should marry. You know, Christina and I are also kind of a product of arranged marriage. I don't want to go into the whole story here, but if you haven't heard our story, we recorded our story about how our marriage was kind of arranged by my father. And if you sign up to follow our blog, you will get a link to that video. And you can watch that. So all you got to do is sign up for our blog. If you already signed up for our blog and somehow you missed the video, just let me know and I can send you a link to it. But some people are kind of surprised to know that Christina and I are sort of the result of an arranged marriage. But you, of course, you have other arranged marriages in Scripture. You have Isaac and Rebecca. Abraham sent his servant off to find a spouse for Isaac. You also have Jacob and his wife or wives, however you want to look at it. And How is that arranged? Well, it was arranged in the sense that Isaac told Jacob very clearly, I don't want you to marry one of these Canaanite women. Not because he was racist, but because he was concerned about character. And he knew that they worshipped false idols, false gods and idols. And so Isaac was directing Jacob to marry someone who worshipped Yahweh. And that's why he sent Jacob back to his homeland to find a wife. Now, he didn't arrange the exact woman for Jacob to marry, but he gave Jacob a very clear set of criteria about the kind of wife he should find, the character of wife that he should find. And then finally, what about Joseph? Joseph in the New Testament. I think that we could also say that his marriage was, in a way, arranged to Mary. Of course, he was already engaged to her, but when he found out that she was pregnant, I mean, that would have been devastating. He didn't want to have anything to do with that. I kind of think that euphoria of being in love left him at that point. He may not have had those wonderful, fuzzy, and warm feelings about Mary when he found out that she was pregnant. But the angel told him that he needed to marry her. And he did. It was an arranged marriage after that point. And it may have been an arranged marriage before that point, but we just don't really know, do we? So there are some good examples of arranged marriages in Scripture. There certainly is no command to arrange marriages, and there is no command that we should not arrange marriages. But there are good examples of arranged marriages. But let's think for a minute about some of the benefits of arranged marriages. First of all, an arranged marriage relies on the years of wisdom of the parents. And in my experience as a child and as a parent, parents know their children better than children know themselves. Parents have more experience in marriage than children have, because children have zero experience. Parents have more experience in life than their children have. So it kind of makes sense that parents should at least help their child in the process of choosing a spouse. So that's the first benefit. It relies on the years and wisdom of the parents. Number two, it removes the blindness of being in love. Have you ever seen a couple that is just so in love that, you know, their boyfriend or their girlfriend is perfect in every single way, and yet, you know, you could point out a few flaws in their boyfriend or their girlfriend? Well, you know, that emotional state of being in love tends to blind us to certain problems. But when the parents are deeply involved in that process, it removes that, because they can see it, because the parents aren't the ones that are in love. Number three, it gives the young couple a healthier start to their marriage. I once heard, and I wish I knew exactly where I heard this from. I think it was one of my seminary profs when I went to seminary. And it was a saying kind of like this from I believe it's from Japan, I believe. But, you know, in a lot of Eastern cultures, there's arranged marriages. And they would say, well, in the West, they start the marriage with a boiling pot, boiling with love and emotion and passion. And after the marriage, they pull that pot off of the burner and it slowly cools and becomes warm and then room temperature and then cold. But in Eastern marriages where it's arranged, they start with a cold pot that is put on the burner at marriage, and it slowly warms to room temperature and then gets warmer until it boils. I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at. You know, arranged marriage really gives the young couple a healthier start to their marriage. Because rather than starting with the idea of, oh, we're in love and we're marrying because we're in love, and then being shocked when all of a sudden they realize, wow, this person's got some problems. You know, they tend to start with the understanding that they're marrying someone that has some problems. And there's going to need to be some deep work that goes on in that marriage to make it flourish and boil. Arranged marriages also, I think, have the benefit of encouraging parents and children to be planning for marriage from an early age. You know, I think that's one of the big mistakes a lot of parents make, is they just kind of leave the whole thing up to their child and hope, and maybe pray, that it'll all be good in the end. But if the parent knows that it's really their responsibility, you can believe that they're going to be working on that a little bit earlier in life. And hopefully, the child will also see that and be thinking about it. One of the things that we often talk with our children about when we have some problems with them or teaching moments is we say, listen, our job as parents is to prepare you to be a good husband or a good wife. And these little struggles that you have with your siblings now, if you can learn to deal with them well, you will be so much further on your way of being a good spouse. That's our job. We need to prepare our children like that. And then lastly, benefits of arranged marriages is it helps children to see that marriage impacts far more people than just me and my spouse. We live in such an individualistic society where our concern is just for me and maybe for my spouse. But, you know, in reality, marriage is such a huge thing in culture, in a nation, we're connected. And I think it's important that our children see that their choice of a spouse, their marriage, will affect far more people than just themselves. It will affect far more people than just themselves and their children. It will affect far more people than just themselves, their children, and their parents. These things have tremendous, long ripple effects. And it's important that the young couple understand that. So, what am I really saying here? Well, you know, what I'm saying is this, and I don't want you to think that I just think, oh, you know, being in love is such a terrible thing, and you should never even consider that. No, being in love is wonderful. In fact, for your information, when I got married to Christina, when we got married, we were completely in love. I mean, yes, head over heels, blind to everything. But, here is the difference. We had both looked first for character. We had looked for character, and we had listened to our parents. And we did. Like I said, listen to our story. Okay? So being in love is not bad. But what I'm really saying here, and I don't think that in our culture today, every parent has to go out and find a spouse for their child, you know, before they turn 6 years old or something like that and have it all planned out and everything. I don't really think that we have to do that. We could. That wouldn't necessarily be wrong, but we don't have to. But what I am saying and what I'm encouraging you to do is to take more of an active role in your parents, in your children's life when it comes to choosing a spouse. And here are a number of things that I believe every parent needs to do in order to take this active role in guiding their child to a spouse that meets biblical standards. First of all, help your child develop a proper understanding of marriage. Of course, you do this by example, but you also do it by teaching. Just talking with them about what is marriage? Why is it important? What is the role of the husband? What is the role of the wife? What does true love look like? Okay? Help your child develop a proper understanding of marriage. Number two, teach your child that romance is really primarily for after marriage, not before. And yes, I understand that in love and those emotions, they come in before marriage most of the time. But honestly, romance is something that is primarily for after marriage. And, you know, friends, Hollywood and Disney do not help us in this. And I'm not against having your kids watch some Disney films and things like that. But if they do, make sure that you are talking with them about some of the mistakes in the world view in those movies. Okay? Make sure you go into that with your eyes open and you open your children's eyes to those things. Thirdly, talk frequently with your children about the importance of finding a spouse with character. Okay? Guide them in that. Talk with them. Listen, this is the kind of woman you need to be looking for. This is the kind of man you need to be looking for. And then finally, you know, just build trust with your children. Build trust in all areas of their life. If you build trust with your children and they can trust you in other areas of life, they will be so much more willing to trust you in the area of marriage. Let me ask you a question. What do you think? How involved should parents be in helping their children choose future spouses? Leave a comment in the show notes and let me know what you think. All right, friends, I have one more announcement. I have a couple of listener questions, which I am going to put off until the next episode. But if you want to have me answer one of your questions, go ahead and just go to sukofamily.org/ask, A-S-K, okay? And I have a little form there. You can fill it out, ask me a question. I already have a couple of questions in, and I will be answering those next time, but this one just ran a little bit long to be able to include those questions. And also, check out the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, leave a rating, leave a review. I would really appreciate it. It helps this podcast get out to a wider audience. And check us out on Stitcher now, too. If you don't use iTunes to download your podcast and you use Stitcher, we are fresh on Stitcher as of this week. So I will include a link in the show notes to that as well. All right, friends. Blessings. Until next time.